This is the Josh Hammer Show.
Back in the 1950s or the 1960s, after the advent of television, but still at the height of the Cold War, would anyone have possibly argued that the Kremlin, the Soviet Union, would have an absolute legal and moral right to inject American television screens with Soviet pro-communist propaganda? I have to imagine the answer is no. And yet somehow, fast forward the clock 60, 70 years, and we're having this exact same debate all over again when it comes to TikTok, the extraordinarily popular social media app owned by ByteDance, a Chinese company. Only when it comes to TikTok, it's actually worse. Yes, TikTok spews all sorts of Chinese Communist Party propaganda. Go ahead, if you are on that godforsaken app, go ahead and load it on your phone or computer. Try to search about the Uyghur Muslims out in Xinjiang province. Try to search about the Tiananmen Square massacre. Try to search about all sorts of other Chinese Communist Party atrocities, the Cultural Revolutions, Chairman Mao's famines. Go ahead and try to search that. You're probably not going to find it. You know what you will find? You will find that recent video that went viral of Osama bin Laden reading his letter to America. TikTok is poison. It is absolute vile garbage poison. It is disseminating not just a hostile regime's propaganda into the screens, the smartphone apps of whoever will get on there. It is actively sowing discord and malcontent and diluting this nation's vulnerable youth into all sorts of social maladies that they would not have otherwise explored. Where do you think all the teenage girls who tragically are not comfortable with their bodies, who are questioning their sexuality, who are questioning whether or not they are a woman in the first place, perhaps they should have a double mastectomy of their very healthy prepubescent adolescent breasts. Where do you think they're getting this information from? From Instagram, yes, but primarily these days from the TikTok algorithm, which again is controlled by a hostile foreign entity, ByteDance. Ultimately, they report to the Chinese Communist Party. Marco Rubio, in a tweet this past week, broke it down quite nicely. Marco Rubio tweeted on Wednesday, March 13th, quote, TikTok is controlled by Chinese company ByteDance. ByteDance engineers in China have access to TikTok user data and use AI processes to build profiles on TikTok users in America. Under Chinese law, ByteDance must use those user profiles. However, the government of China orders them to use them. China is already using ByteDance profiles to target and influence the behavior, values, ideology, political opinions, and votes of American TikTok users. The legislation that recently passed the U.S. House by an overwhelming margin, before it got to the House floor, it passed the House Energy and Commerce Committee by a 50-0 vote. Do you know how gobsmackingly obvious a bill, a piece of legislation has to be in today's extraordinarily partisan, ultra-polarized political moment in order to secure a 50-0 unanimous majority in a major committee, in this case, the Energy and Commerce Committee? We're not talking here about free speech. You don't have a free speech right as a foreign corporation to operate freely, unequivocally, without any restraints, without any guardrails in this country. The idea that people are making this argument is ludicrous. Absolutely bonkers insane. Once upon a time, Donald Trump understood that. In fact, Donald Trump, when he was president towards the end of his term, emerged as one of the leading proponents to severely curtail or outright ban TikTok. He was helped along by some of his closest big tech skeptical allies in the Congress, folks like Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who has been a leader on this front. Unfortunately, it seems like Donald Trump has had something of a recent change of heart on this issue. He's had some recent meetings with a major Pennsylvania-based Republican and conservative donor by the name of Jeffrey Yass, who is a ultra-billionaire, a hedge fund magnate, a huge donor to Republican and conservative causes. He is the single largest donor to the Club for Growth, a free market conservative organization, primarily affiliated with the Tea Party era, but still operating today. They've had an up-and-down relationship with Donald Trump. And after Trump's meeting with Jeffrey Yass, he did a 180 on the TikTok issue, a total and complete 180. Now, he is defending his 180, by which I mean his calls to not force a sale of TikTok from ByteDance. He has justified this by saying that this legislation, which again would simply force ByteDance, the Chinese company, to sell TikTok as a condition of further operating in the Apple and Google app stores on your smartphone. He has justified this 180-degree swap by saying that undermining TikTok like this would only help Meta, which controls Facebook and Instagram. What he's basically saying is he's saying that Facebook really hurt me in 2020. They helped ruin my re-election, and I'm not going to do anything whatsoever that I think has any chance of benefiting Facebook, which is a weird argument on its face, that you wouldn't support a very straightforward pro-American national security measure that, again, is as bipartisan as Yankee Doodle Dandy and apple pie. 50-0 in the House Energy and Commerce Committee. National security experts, FBI directors, Christopher Wray, you name it. Anyone across the board who has studied this issue has concluded that TikTok is spewing Chinese Communist Party propaganda. They are flooding our smartphones and apps with all sorts of anti-American propaganda. Osama bin Laden's letter being a great example. The ratio of pro-Hamas to pro-Israel content on TikTok is 15-1, 20-1. It's an anti-Western civilization subversive threat. And a threat that comes with deep social costs, as we were just discussing when it comes to the predations of gender ideology for this nation's vulnerable teenage girl population in particular. Nonetheless, despite Trump flipping 180, this bill to force ByteDance, the Chinese company to sell TikTok, passed by a huge majority in the House. You only had 15 Republicans, by my count, who voted no. Good for them. And they voted no, possibly because Trump flipped, possibly because you have Kellyanne Conway, the former close Trump advisor who is now being retained by the Club for Growth, by Jeff Yass, to lobby on Capitol Hill in favor of TikTok. And the argument, in addition to Trump and Facebook and Meta, the other argument that I've heard is that, oh, you don't want to do this in election year. You have a lot of young voters who love TikTok. They're addicted to it. Why would you want to tick them off by banning their favorite app? Well, first of all, no one's trying to actually, quote unquote, ban TikTok. That's somewhat of a media misnomer right now. The actual legislation would simply force a sale by a Chinese-owned conglomerate. Just sell it. Divest the asset. If you do that, then you'll go up and running in Apple and Google app stores. No big deal. But the much more important point there, to allow this sort of political speculation about appeasing the idiosyncratic interests of your Gen Z and millennial constituents and possible voters over a national security concern that is as clear cut as day. Literal Chinese Communist Party spyware reaching hundreds of millions of Americans, able to access them with a push notification. It is irresponsible at best, and a whole lot worse than that at worst. TikTok has to be banned in America, or again, at a bare minimum, forced ByteDance to sell the company. We cannot have, in the year 2024, in the midst of this century-long cold civil war against the Chinese, we cannot have Chinese Communist Party spyware infiltrating this country, deluding this nation's youth, and ruining this nation's minds.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So I've been working on a project for months now that I finally shared the good news this past week. I have a book coming out. Not for a while. We have just signed the contract, just starting the manuscript now. So don't expect it to be in a bookstore near you for a good while now. We're targeting early 2025 release. But this is my first book. You know, I've written God knows how many columns, God knows how many op-eds, God knows how many essays, given God knows how many speeches. Never written a full book. And I'm deeply excited to do so. This book is tentatively titled Sinai and Civilization. And the impetus, as you might glean from that title, has to do with October 7th, 2023. Has to do with the Hamas Holocaust of that horrific day, the war that is continuing in Gaza. But more so than the actual war on the ground, what I have truly, truly been alarmed at is the war of ideas, the war of rhetoric, the war in the public discourse nationally and indeed globally. You have seen the rise of a noxious, vile Jew hatred, the likes of which the Western world has not seen probably since the 1930s. And I have seen the rise of this all over the political spectrum. It is not merely a far left phenomenon. They're the worst. They are obviously the worst. But whether it is the woke left, whether it is Islamist apologists, or whether it is a small subsegment of reactionaries, Nietzscheans, and some folks like that on the right, folks like Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, I've seen it all over. And it really is time. It really is time for someone to just make the case that you don't have Western civilization without the Jewish people. You don't have Western civilization without the original people of the book. You don't have Western civilization without God's revelation to Moses at Mount Sinai. You don't have any of this. You don't have Christianity by definition without Judaism, without the Torah, with the Old Testament, whatever you want to call it. And it really is time for someone to make this case and to argue that the fate of Western civilization is inextricably intertwined with the fate of the Jews. Anti-Semitism, Jew hatred is here, there, and everywhere, simply a canary in the coal mine. It starts with the Jews. It never, ever ends with the Jews. So I cannot wait to get this thing across the finish line. God willing, we'll continue to keep you updated here on the show about my progress. And then, of course, we'll keep you updated when it comes to the actual book tour, God willing, that will come after this thing is published. But for present purposes, the war in Gaza is continuing. And specifically, what is happening now is you are seeing the much anticipated and easily foreseeable feud out in the open between Joe Biden and Bibi Netanyahu. This feud was literally the most easily foreseeable thing in the world. I remember after October 7th, when Joe Biden gets up there, I think it was the Tuesday afterwards, or just a few days after the pogrom, and he gave this very ostensibly pro-Israel speech, talking about his longstanding support for the Jewish state, and he always references his initial trip there many decades ago to visit Prime Minister Golda Meir, and he comes across as speaking from the heart. In fact, he didn't just come across as speaking from the heart. My understanding is that a lot of Israeli elementary schools over in Israel started teaching their youngsters, their children, English using Joe Biden's speech that he delivered that day, because it resonated just that deeply with the people there who, again, had just suffered this absolutely grievous tragedy. But unfortunately, for those of us who have been around the block a little bit, who are a little more cynical or jaded, I would just argue sober about these matters, we all knew that Biden's turn was coming. I literally wrote this on October 20th, just 13 days after the pogrom. This was the final line of the column that I wrote that day. Quote, no matter how much pressure Biden applies, and no matter how nasty the public relations battle gets, let's pray Netanyahu and his war cabinet finish the job in Gaza. I literally wrote that on October 20th. And sure enough, here we are, just a few months later. Joe Biden is now accusing Israel of going over the top when it comes to their response in Gaza. Over the top when it comes to them taking the most humane restrictions that any military has self-imposed on itself, according to U.S. Military Academy at West Point professors, in the history of warfighting. Too much over the top conduct in Gaza, notwithstanding the fact that babies were put in ovens, senior citizens were shot dead point blank in their rooms, mass rapes, pillaging, and on, we discussed it on this show. It's even worse than that. In his wretched, vile, and disgraceful State of the Union address, Biden was going on and on and on about how Israel has to finish this thing. They are now using the C word. The Biden-Harris administration is now using the ceasefire word. Whether they mean a short-term ceasefire or a permanent ceasefire, who knows? But that is where the Democratic Party's base is right now. That is where Dearborn, Michigan is right now. That is where Minneapolis, Minnesota, Ilhan Omar's district there, that is where that base is right now. And he's capitulating. Joe Biden or whoever his handlers are, quote-unquote Dr. Jill or whoever purports to be running his campaign, they see the numbers. They see that Joe Biden is hemorrhaging support when it comes to Black and Hispanic voters, Black voters in particular, who tend to be a little less pro-Israel than their white counterparts, typically speaking, in American public polling. They see they're cratering Gen Z and millennial support, their 18 to 35 demographic, one of the key demographics of the modern Democratic Party post-Obama, post-2008 coalition. They see the same numbers that I see. And they have decided that they rather prioritize radical Muslims in Dearborn, Michigan, and radical Jew-hating progressives in their grassroots who are inundated with pro-Hamas garbage on apps like TikTok, which we just discussed. They rather prioritize all of that than standing simply shoulder to shoulder with one of America's most strategically and vitally important long-standing allies in a war that they did not choose, where they have gone above and beyond to impose restrictions to best ensure civilian safety. It's just ludicrous, ludicrous stuff.
This is the Josh Hammer Show.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
There are only a handful of writers out there who I actually try to keep up and read every single thing that they write. One of them is the great Dennis Prager. I try to read Dennis's syndicated column every single week. And his most recent column really stuck with me. The title of Dennis's column was, quote, "The Pope hopes no one is in hell. We should." And what Dennis used as a launching off point for his column was an interview that Pope Francis recently gave. It was a television interview. And as quoted by Catholic news agency, Pope Francis said, when he was asked about how he imagines hell, how he imagines hell to be, Pope Francis said this, quote, "What I am going to say is not a dogma of faith, but my own personal view. I like to think of hell as empty. I hope it is." Now, I think for a certain type of listener, a certain type of kumbaya, hippie, let's all get along sort of listener, you probably hear that quote and think, oh, wow, that's great. Even the Pope is saying that hell should be empty. I mean, heck, I guess that means that everyone is in heaven. Wow, I mean, good for you, Pope. I mean, you're really saying that humanity is actually in a good place right now. That's great. I don't have to worry about divine retribution. I don't have to worry about an afterlife. Now, Dennis Prager takes in a very different direction, and his instincts on this firmly align with mine, so I want to unpack it a little bit for you here. Now, with the important caveat that as a Jew, I don't necessarily believe in the exact, precise, same concept of hell that my Christian friends believe in, but we do have a concept of a dark eschatology. It's referred to as Gehenna. It refers to a physical valley in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem. And then we have our version of heaven, which is Olam Haba, the world to come. So we have rough equivalents. You know, it is often said that Jews don't believe in hell. And it's true, we don't believe in it or believe in the concept of the capital D devil the exact same way that our Christian friends do, but we absolutely do believe in Gehenna, which is roughly analogous to hell, and we absolutely do believe in demonic and satanic forces operating in this world and so forth. So with that caveat aside, the key point here is that what Pope Francis is getting at, and Pope Francis is a man of the left, he is unequivocally a man of the left. That is his background. That has always been his political background, whether it comes to economics, whether it comes to some of his liberal-leaning statements, when it comes to official church doctrine. He is tapping into a very modern and uber-egalitarian mentality that is at loggerheads, in deep and profound tension with the actual teachings of the Judeo-Christian tradition more generally, of Judaism and all branches of Christianity. All monotheistic religions are partially predicated upon the notion that you will be judged. You will be judged from a Christian perspective, from your actions, but also by your pronouncement of faith, John 3:16 and so forth. And from a Jewish perspective, you are judged more simply by your actions. In fact, the Rambam, Maimonides, one of our great, great halakhic sages, one of our great Jewish sages ever, literally codifies this as one of his 13 principles of faith. It's one of his 13 principles of faith in the Jewish tradition that those who do good will be rewarded and those who do bad will be punished. It is the exact opposite of that, the exact opposite of that, that Pope Francis is getting at here. How do you purport to believe in a godly world that does not entail making judgments, ethical judgments, value judgment, judging people's lifestyles, judging people's actions, judging people's faith itself? Surely the entire point, or one of the entire points, of the Bible, with all of its enumerated codes of conduct, which activities are proscribed, which are mandated and stipulated, is to clarify the guardrails with which one is to lead a virtuous, moral, and upstanding life. And it logically follows that as a result of that, that if you live according to the precepts that is in the good book, then you will be rewarded. And if you're not, you will be punished. Again, this is the basic Jewish answer to the millennia-long, ever-perplexing question of theodicy, how one reconciles the existence of a just God with the existence of human suffering in this world. The traditional Jewish response to that would be that it all works out in Olam Haba, in the world to come. That is the traditional Jewish answer to the question of theodicy. So you have to believe, though, in both rewarding the good and punishing the bad. And again, what Francis is getting at here, it's coming from a very, very left-wing place where he is reticent, he is reluctant to make judgments. He is reluctant to look at his fellow man and say, you, sir, or you, ma'am, you are wrong. You are wrong for doing this. You are wrong for saying this. Maybe not wrong for thinking this, because we don't want to punish thought crimes, but at least actions and words. Human civilization cannot exist unless we issue judgments on actions and words. To not issue judgments on one's actions and words is to go down the never-ending, winding rabbit hole of moral relativism, which is how the West has found itself in this predicament that we are currently in many ways, in the first place. So it's deeply, deeply uninspiring and frankly just somewhat galling to me to see the Pope, the leader of the Catholic Church, say this kind of thing. I want the leader of the Catholic Church, the largest church in the world, I want the leader of the church, I want the Pope to believe in hell. I want the Pope to believe in heaven there. He is getting at this equity mindset, ultimately, where he is too reluctant to say that you are wrong. It really is kind of the religious, theological equivalent in many ways of Ibram X. Kendi-style, quote-unquote, anti-racism, critical race theory, DEI, all of the modern woke pathologies. You're seeing him borrow a lot of this from social theory, and it is kind of ending up here in a theological musing. It's not a theological pronouncement, because he is careful, to his credit, of saying that this is only his personal view. But what moral authority does the Catholic Church have when the Pope is saying he hopes hell doesn't exist? How are you ultimately going to get your followers, Catholics all around the world, to do that which the good book, the catechism, and all the Catholic social thought, the teachings, how are you going to get them to do that which it says if you're going to renounce, at least in your idyllic setting, the idea of divine punishment? It just doesn't add up. It's another reminder, unfortunately, that Pope Francis is a man of the left, as if we needed another reminder there. Certainly, Pope Benedict, who passed away within the past year and a half or so, certainly he would never have issued a musing thought like this. But you should believe in hell, or Gehenna if you're Jewish. To not do so is to renounce making moral judgments, and ultimately to renounce our Western heritage more generally.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Hammer Time.
UVA is spending $20 million per year on its DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion personnel. And guess what they're making? So Martin Davidson, who is UVA's chief diversity officer, he's also a business professor at UVA's Darden School of Business. He is the highest paid official at UVA. He makes $452,000 per year, up to $587,000 plus dollars, including benefits. The vice president for DEI and community partnerships, whatever the heck that means, also is receiving over $400,000 per year. This is coming from our friends at OpenTheBooks.com, a wonderful site dedicated to fiscal transparency. What in the world? For almost $600,000, you're going to have some meetings with quote-unquote allies that inevitably will entail just open, frank conversations about how systemic racism exists and how certain types of people, because of their statistics or their demographics, their skin color, their religion, their country of national origin, their sexual orientation, are you oppressed or are you an oppressor? And just for having these conversations, just for trying to make some people feel like they are oppressed and to try to make other people feel terrible because their ancestors from 100, 150 years ago, whatever, were oppressors, for that you're making this much money? Look, is there anything at the end of the day, is there anything more fundamentally divisive than the DEI mentality? DEI, which on the university campuses and in the American corporate boardroom right now is the tip of the spear of the woke cancer that is metastasizing all throughout the American body politic. There is nothing good. Do not be gaslit. There is nothing good that comes from such an intense focus on diversity. Are we ultimately e pluribus unum? Are we one out of many? Does America still believe that? That's what the founding fathers believed when they made e pluribus unum one of America's national mottos. With every DEI flower that spreads and becomes an entire prairie unto itself, we get further and further away from that vision. UVA, by the way, still has a Republican governor there in Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. I would like to see some hard-hitting executive orders trying to defund this as much as possible, given the fact that the legislature there in Richmond is politically divided. Al Sharpton is pressuring Joe Biden to address high unemployment in the black community. So Al Sharpton, who pops his head up to make some bizarre headline every few months, he's at it again. He's saying that workers of color have faced huge challenges in recovering from the pandemic. Sharpton argued that white unemployment in America is at 3%, whereas black unemployment is at 9.3%. So I have a few things to say of this. First of all, Mr. Sharpton, I'm not going to call you Reverend, I'll call you Mr. Sharpton. Do you know, off the top of your head, Mr. Sharpton, which president actually presided over the lowest black unemployment rate in the entire history of that statistic since we started tracking it? Oh yeah, it was Donald Trump. Donald Trump literally got us to the lowest black unemployment rate that rate has ever had. It was towards the end of his presidency, right before the COVID pandemic, 2018, 2019, right around then. If you want more jobs for black Americans, Al Sharpton, the easiest and most straightforward way to do that, if past is prologue, which it often is in politics, then go ahead and pull the ballot lever this November for Donald Trump. You're not going to do that, though, are you? Because of reasons or this or that. But if you were actually a man of your word and you really did care about black unemployment, that is what you would do. It is worth also remembering Al Sharpton, 33 years after the Crown Heights riot that he helped instigate, that led to the murder of an Orthodox Jewish yeshiva student studying there by the name of Yankel Rosenbaum. Say his name, media. Say his name, Al Sharpton. 33 years since that, he has still not apologized for his role in instigating that pogrom in Crown Heights. Furthermore, you have nominally Jewish leaders, folks like the absolute idiot Jonathan Greenblatt, the head of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, who do public events with Al Sharpton, as Greenblatt did in 2022, without conditioning their joint appearance on him apologizing for that pogrom. So, you know, MSNBC, which platforms Al Sharpton, and many other media outlets have chosen to forget about Al Sharpton's murderous role in the 1991 Crown Heights riots that led to the death of Yankel Rosenbaum. We have not forgotten about it here on the Josh Hammer Show. Nearly 30% of Gen Z women identify as LGBTQ, a Gallup survey finds. You want to go a little deeper here? Women aged 18 to 26 were more than twice as likely to identify to pollsters as LGBTQ than their millennial counterparts. So, look, one of two things is going on here, okay? Either genetically, the gene that causes someone to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or whatever the heck the Q stands for, stuff like that. Either this gene is proliferating, the likes of which we have not seen when it comes to DNA structure, when it comes to human genetics, probably in centuries. Either it's proliferating at a massive rate to get Gen Z to be twice as likely to have the women identify as LGBTQ, or this is a social contagion. Social contagion being the phrase that the great Abigail Schreier used for her book on this very subject a few years ago. It is transparently and obviously a social contagion. The Princeton University freshman class, or they probably call it first years now because freshmen would be, of course, too heteronormative. The Princeton University first year class from two Septembers ago self-identified as somewhere between 35 and 40% LGBTQ. That is literally not possible. It is just statistically not possible. With every app like TikTok that gets on there spreading all sorts of disinformation, trying to encourage girls that they are something that they are not, that they have to chop off their breasts in order to fit in, that they're never going to date a guy, they might as well start dating a girl, this and that. That is obviously what is going on here. This is not coming from a place of human genetics. It is coming from a place of a social media inspired TikTok and Instagram driven social contagion, which, oh, by the way, is also having tremendous mental health effects as well, as we've seen in the skyrocketing rates of depression and tragically suicide for that same subset of the population, teenage girls. Federal judge strikes down California gun sale rationing restriction. This is an onerous and unconstitutional California law referred to as the one gun a month policy. It was struck down by Judge William Hayes recently. He found that it fell outside of the scope of the nation's historic tradition of gun regulation. That is the test that the Supreme Court announced for Second Amendment regulation in the landmark Bruin case of 2022. You basically do this historical inquiry. Is this sort of regulation within or outside of our historical tradition of gun regulation? I mean, what an utterly asinine policy. One gun a month. I obviously, this is unconstitutional. Look, the Supreme Court has tried very hard to rule as infrequently as possible when it comes to the Second Amendment. They had the landmark Heller case in 2008, which was the first time in the history of the Republic that the court said that the Second Amendment actually means what it says, that you have an individual right to keep and bear arms. 2 years later, in the McDonald case, they extended that to the states. And then they took 12 years until the Bruin case out of New York State in 2022, where they finally said that the phrase bear arms necessarily does entail some sort of constitutional right unto itself to either open or conceal carry. And even since the Bruin case 2 terms ago, you've had any number of lower courts that have tried to undermine it, that have tried to disingenuously say that way more regulations actually do fall into this historical tradition of gun regulation than a legitimate historical inquiry or assessment would otherwise lead you to conclude. So good for Judge Hayes here for handing down this opinion. Look, as they say, as goes California, as goes the country. After you have the 2010 McDonald case, which said that the Second Amendment applies not just federally, but to all 50 states, that means all 50 states, not just Texas, not just Florida, not just Tennessee, or not just any other big red state. That means that it applies nationwide, no less in Massachusetts, Illinois, or California, as it does in Florida, Texas, and so forth. So this is a propitious trend. I hope that more California gun regulations continue to get swatted down on this Bruin historical inquiry test. Finally, CVS leadership training requires participants to confess privilege and make allyship pledges. So this is a training titled, quote, Creating a DEI Action Plan. It was given just last month to CVS employees, and the participants were asked to audit their own biases and pledge to become allies in service of that grand, noble DEI agenda. This is the cancer that is at this point ubiquitous in corporate America. CVS is not the only company that is doing this. At this point, frankly, you name it, they're probably doing it. Now, the good news is that based on the statistics that we have seen from the past year, there was a big Wall Street Journal report from last summer, last July or August or so, that did show that DEI officers in corporate America were being slashed by a 30 to 40% margin on a year-over-year basis. But clearly, they're not slashing it quickly enough if CVS is requiring participants to confess their privilege. Look, if you are a CVS employee, you know, it would be very easy for me to tell you just quit your job, find another job. If that's an option for you, then you probably should do it if you morally object to this sort of ridiculous activity, which you should. But assuming that you can't do that, that you like your job, steady income, steady paycheck, I totally get it. Assuming that you can't do that, at a bare minimum, go ahead and take notes. If you're legally allowed to, go ahead and record what is happening, take detailed notes, screenshots, and share all of it with the very, very, very successful conservative public interest law firms that are out there. Folks like America First Legal, headed by Stephen Miller, the former Trump administration official. America First Legal would absolutely love to start filing some mass lawsuits based on underlying conduct like this. I don't speak for America First Legal, but I'm pretty sure I know that this is exactly the sort of nonsense that would be right on their crosshairs. CVS, I hope that you have your just comeuppance and have it soon.
The Josh Hammer Show.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.